Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
A very brief, and I promise brief, visit to our founders in 1787, writing the Constitution. I think they felt that they had created a political system that would choose people as presidents who were not too likely to have been to be accused of criminal conduct. I think that's safe. So if they came back in 2024, the first thing they would say, I think, is, you know, our system did not work. What happened? But, you know,
can we take a moment? These people talking about the Trump trial are so in love with the sound of their own voice. So desperately in love with the sound of their own voice. But here, they're bringing up a conversation of, does the system work? Well, the answer is, of course the system works. Maybe the people don't work. Ah, this is the argument that's being made by cable news networks, that the election of Trump is proof that the system doesn't work. It's because to these elitists, the failure is that of you for not being, well, what they think is acceptable. Tony Katz today. Great to be with you. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. He is actually, I forget which pseudo-intellectual that is at MSNBC. It doesn't matter. He's having a conversation about Federalist 10. Now, if you never read the Federalist Papers, you should. And let me say, for the record, it's a boring read. The Federalist Papers, written in a way, engaged in a bit of tedium, it's not enjoyable. What it is, when you're done, is very illuminating. Because the Federalist Papers are the writings of Madison, fourth president. They're the writings of Alexander Hamilton. And they're the writings of John Jay. John Jay was the first Supreme Court justice, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. The Federalist Papers are what were used as the propaganda tool through newspapers to get people to buy into the concept of the Constitution, because the Constitution was, why would I ever believe that this nonsense works? What possibly can make me think that somehow we the people can govern ourselves? We have lived our whole lives with a king, and now we're not going to have somebody ruling over us, telling us what's best? You're crazy, people. I tell you, you're nuts. The idea of good people and the idea of rational people is, I think, well discussed in an interesting way in Federalist Number 10, where Madison discusses the idea of faction. So if you were to define faction, because words have meaning, one of the divisions of parties of in a games of a circus, or a party in political society combined or acting in unison in opposition to the government or state. Or, said differently, a faction is a group of people who find a common interest, a common bond, a common ground. And his argument is that faction leads to disruption. And so what a constitution needs to do is to be able to handle the whims and issues of faction in order to be able to provide a better result. And it was his belief that the Constitution can do just that. Right? As he wrote it, there are two methods of curing the mischiefs of faction. The one by removing its causes, the other by controlling its effects. That's a rational argument. That if you have this faction, these people who are united and actuated by some common impulse or passion or of interest, especially adverse to the rights of other citizens, well, there are two methods. You can remove the causes or you can control the effects. Then there are two methods of removing the causes of faction: destroying the liberty which is essential to its existence, or by giving every citizen the same opinions, the same passions, and the same interests. Well, Both of those suck. The idea that we would destroy liberty is one thing. We can clearly say, yeah, we don't want that. Liberty being different from freedom. The other one, giving every citizen the same opinions, the same passions, and the same interests. One could argue that that's what we see from cable news right now. From the vast preponderance of mainstream news right now. From culture right now. It's amazing that the people who talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion don't buy in, don't believe, have no value, put no value to it. They don't believe in diversity. This was Dr. freaking Phil. Dr. Phil on his show, Dr. Phil Primetime. And there's some woman talking who I've never heard of a day in my life. I've never seen her a day in my life. And she's talking about equality of outcomes.
Some demographics come to the table and have to overcome racism, unconscious bias, misogyny. And so how do we help level the playing field for everyone?
Okay, so that means you're trying to create equality of outcome. Mm-hmm. That's what I hear you saying about playing God. Yeah. How do you create equality of outcome when people aren't the same? You're right. Some people are shorter. Some people are taller looking over that fence. They can't both play in the NBA.
Right.
You can't create equality of outcome. What gives a DEI program the right to come in and try and alter the nature of things to create equality of outcome? So, that's been tried. That didn't work. That was called Marxism.
Communism, however you want to describe it, Dr. Phil, but well done and well played. What they're trying to do is exactly this. Give every citizen the same opinions, the same passions, the same interests, and what they really want to give is the same result. Well, that's valueless as well. Madison, in my view of Federalist 10, really thought that the Constitution would provide, and through this system and through the rationale of the people, the best candidates. We could all agree that we don't get the best candidates. I think that's obvious. There are times where there are actually good candidates. You know, this idea that every politician is terrible and every politician is a crook, that is just such low-class, low-rent, pseudo-intellectual garbage to be believed. And not everybody is a lowlife. It's just not the way it is. Not everybody is a member of the Lincoln Project. Not everybody is a lowlife. We do have good candidates out there, and sometimes we get the candidates we deserve. And this concept of faction is really messing us up. Look at the people who are more interested in the like than they are in the policy. The difference is on the political right, the factions exist in silos for specific members. For the political left, it exists in toto because they are all in lockstep on the same radical ideology. For example, the green movement. You don't get to have a gas stove. The people who vote for Trump are not these people involved in some radicalness of faction. As I see it, I would go the other way. The people who vote for Trump are the ones who are sick and tired of faction. Let me bring you Bill Maher. Now, I checked this producer, Jason. He doesn't curse in it. He's talking to Katie Couric, and that's America's sweetheart. And Bill Maher would never curse in front of America's sweetheart. He would do other things, but he wouldn't curse in front of America's sweetheart. And it's a conversation that they have about his boredom with the attacks on Trump. I want you to hear it. Listen.
Okay, remember the town hall he had on CNN about 6 months ago, and the audience loved it. The audience loved it. I mean,
was stacked with Trump supporters.
Well, they said Republicans and independents. That's what they said. Okay, maybe it was. How'd they get in? If they did, that's on CNN.
I agree. I think it is on CNN, and the vetting process
was... Well, then you got to get a better audience person.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like the person who handed the gun to Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
you know, got to get good people in all these positions.
I agree. Only,
okay, so if that was about whatever, if it was, here's what happened. Here's what people saw in America. They saw Trump killing it with the crowd. Then you come to a panel of six people who all just do nothing but dump on him and call him a liar. And America goes, oh, didn't you just see that we like him?
And he's now, not a stand-up comedian.
What?
He's killing it. He's not a stand-up comedian.
No, but popular, it doesn't matter. The people loved him and what he was saying. And then you cut to a panel of six know-it-alls in Washington who just do nothing but talk about the negative. And like, I'm all in on the negative. No one's been harder on Trump than me. But I get it, and I'm bored with it. And there's a different way to do this, I think. Which
so
is
how,
to,
what is it?
Not to defend Trump, but to defend the people who still vote for him, because what they see on the other side to them is even more dangerous, because it's very closer to home. My kid is coming home from school, and he thinks he's a racist. He's uh-huh. five. What have you been telling him?
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
My son thinks maybe he's not a boy, and maybe that's true. That happens. But, you know, those kind of things are what they say, that's why I'm voting for Trump.
The pendulum swinging so far.
Conservative guy once said to me, what you don't get about Trump is we don't like him either. Now, that's not true for all people. There are people who just love his dirty drawers, mm-hmm. and they are dirty. But... lots of people, it's like that. We don't like him, but he's all that stands between us and madness. That's their view.
So
that, that view presented.
You know he's right because you said that before, and we've said that before. But it's an interesting understanding of why people do vote for him. Not that they are the faction, it's that they are exhausted by the faction that they see. And so when MSNBC goes to lecture, and culture goes to lecture about you terrible, awful people, it is a failure to recognize and honestly address the faction that has driven people to the place. I can't have a gas stove. I can't have a combustion engine. I can't run my air conditioning. You want power over my actual power. I can't have a transaction over $600 without you keeping tabs on it. But those people can have their student loan debt paid for. And every day you call me a racist and a bigot, and you find new ways to call me a racist and a bigot. The people who vote for Trump are not some kind of cult. Although, as Bill Maher denotes, and we could all agree, some are. That's true everywhere. A vast majority of people voting for Trump are opposed to the cult that is indeed coming for their kids and coming for them. This is the honest conversation. I'm thrilled to see Bill Maher engaged in it. Thrilled. Read Federalist 10. And Madison was not 100% correct in terms of how the system would give us better candidates. But maybe it could be seen that the system keeps us from getting even worse candidates. And by the way, the passions of the time, they were crazy too. Let's not think it's a more difficult time, it's a more perilous time. They were just engaged in defeating the king and going about self-rule. They had their pressures too. I'm Tony Katz. So the blockaders are still blockading. This was the Jew-hating bigots around the country who were going to engage in economic blockade to show their support for Palestine. Yeah, sure. Great. Like Iran is showing its support for Palestine by trying to kill every Jew they can find. Tony Katz, 93 WIBC. Good morning. So they've taken to Chicago San Francisco, Oakland, they've taken to Philadelphia, they've taken to Tampa Bay. They're blocking the streets. They blocked the way into O'Hare Airport. They are blocking right now the Golden Gate Bridge. We had gotten a notification that Indianapolis, that's where I'm at, is on the list. I did not see Tulsa on the list, but Indianapolis was. I think Des Moines was on the list, a couple other Midwest cities. We haven't seen anything yet. Producer Jason was noting that it is flat out infuriating that, you know, it's been well over an hour, and there are these people just standing on the Golden Gate Bridge shutting it down, and nothing's happening. And that's what's right. You're watching it right now, Producer Jason?
Absolutely.
And are they like in a line? Because the people in Chicago at O'Hare, they had like their arms in tubes. And so I don't know if they were like handcuffed in the tube or whatever it is. And they're all in a line and stopping traffic. Is that what's going on with the San Francisco peeps?
Yeah, and the line of sheriffs, they're just standing there in a line. They should be, well, there should be a lot more going on right now.
Yes, but how do you really feel?
I don't condone violence, but in this situation, I'm thinking maybe we need to see some.
See, I'm not saying it's violence. Hold on a second. I think you have to forcibly remove these people.
We'll call it forcibly remove.
That's exactly it. They could scream that it's violence, but the problem is they never like acknowledge their own act of violence. It's violent to shut down a bridge and keep me from traveling. It's violent. Of course it is. It's abusive. Why would anybody be okay with it? But the social contract comes into play, and somehow we let this happen because we're like, well, the police take care of it. We just have to wait. Crazy talk. When the people actually get involved in saying no to this, things will change. And what's amazing is you'll hear from the White House, it's wrong what these people did. No, not the pro-Jew-hating protesters. You! They'll tell you that you were wrong. That's the part absolutely stunning, but for a lot of people, in no way shocking. In no way shocking. This is just the way it works. And then some sad news to get into. I didn't want to have to be the bearer of bad news to you, but it was necessary for me to inform you that King Charles on CNN, starring Gail King and Charles Barkley, there will not be another season. The show did not last. The great Charles Barkley, the friend of Oprah, Gail King, just could not get the audience to buy in and believe. And I have to tell you, I've never seen such a case of racism in my whole life. What, they won't call it race? I thought they would. I thought, well, Charles probably wouldn't. Charles is like, I had a good time. You see the paychecks, it was fantastic. I'm done here. I'm going back to TNT and making fun of Shaq. I don't need this. And Gail King is going to say, see, this is why I need to be solo. People only want to see me. They don't want to see Charles Barkley. Oh, yeah, I pegged them both, right? Just for the sake of clarity. Honestly, if someone had said, hey, we're going to pair you up with Gail King and you're going to do a show on CNN, I'd be like, great. Gail, how are you? Paycheck? Fantastic. Let's actually try and do the best show humanly possible. Oh, you're not interested in that? Okay. Then I guess I'll try and do the best show humanly possible and I'll ride until it's over. Yeah, you take the shot. You take the shot. Looking at the markets, a weird thing happened because inflation is here, but retail sales were up 0.7%. 0.7? What in the world is going on? Well, not everything is as good as it looks. I will explain. Dr. Matt Will will join me. This is Tony Katz Today. Tesla's going to lay off more than 10% of their workforce. 10% of the workforce. People are not buying as many electrics. That could have something to do with it, with Elon Musk. I mean, he took out all the bloat at X to make that lean, and, well, the product still works, and some could argue better than before. Tony Katz, great to be with you, Tony Katz, today. That is just one of the stories. The big one was retail sales. Retail sales in the month of March, not just higher than the expected 0.3, at 0.7. 0.7%. This coming after February, which got revised upward to 0.9%. How in the world do we have inflation not going anywhere but up, yet we have retail sales higher? I looked at that and I said, I think these are bad, bad things. Let's make sure I'm right. Dr. Matt Will joins me right now, economist at the University of Indianapolis. When I texted this to you, you said this is the only thing saving Biden's butt. Talk to me about these sales numbers. What do they say to you?
Well, we can't say everything in the world is good or bad. It can be both. And these are very good numbers. 0.7, that's a dramatic increase over the previous month. And if you look since last year, it's up over 4%. And on top of that, they revised last month's numbers up to 0.9. You stole my thunder by mentioning it. Those are really good pieces of information that shows you that the consumer is working really hard to buy things. But what's scary is what they're buying it with. And what they're buying it with is credit cards. And that is the bad picture here. That's the scary part in this whole situation.
So let's first look at this number and the 0.7. And let me ask the question this way. Is this proof that people are more than happy to buy? Or is this proof that prices have gone up so much that if they're buying, they're just spending more?
No, because these are not always adjusted for inflation, but these are what we call seasonalized numbers. So you can't say that it's just inflation causing this. These are legitimate increases in spending. But the why they're doing it, you know, you offered a kind of a hypothesis there. I don't know the reason why. I can't figure out the reason why. It doesn't make sense to me because they're putting it on their debt, on their credit card. They're not saving as much. They're defaulting on loans. This isn't a good reason to be increasing your spending.
The increases in the debt, let us discuss it. Talking with Dr. Matt Will, economist at the University of Indianapolis. The credit card debt is $1.12 trillion at the end of the fourth quarter of 2023. $1.12 trillion. Then you have, as you have noted, defaults. Talk to me about what you can regarding defaults, where you're seeing it, and as an economist, what does this, what is the point of no return, if you will?
Well, you know, there's a whole different, there's many parts to the delinquency and the default on credit cards. The first is that we are now at the highest default rate on credit card loans of all commercial banks that we've seen in the last 10 years. The only time it was higher was pre-2008 crash of the market when we had the whole real estate meltdown. But I like to look at something different. You know how this president has been attacking the regional banks? They've been attacking those middle, you know, America banks. If you look at just those banks, forget about, you know, the Chases of the world, the big giant mega banks. If you look at just the regional banks that this president and this Treasury Secretary have attacked, the delinquency and the credit card and loans from those banks is at the highest point in the history of our country. The highest delinquency rate we've seen, I should say, since we've been keeping records. What does that tell you? That there is an attack on the middle class. There's an attack on you and your hometown in middle America by this president. and that these people who are spending the money propping up the economy, and they should get a thank you note from him. They're not getting a thank you note. Instead, they're defaulting on their loans. That scares me. And then we haven't even gotten to the savings rate yet. It's just credit cards that are in bad shape at the moment.
So the you say at the moment, we've also seen the Wall Street Journal reporting people utilizing their 401ks as cash machines to deal with the rising prices of all things. Do these retail sales numbers, does that denote a lowering of prices anytime soon? Because I shouldn't answer the question. Let me ask the question and let you answer it. Does it denote prices will come down?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Just like I don't know why people are taking on so much debt and defaulting on debt to make these purchases. I need to get a consumer focus group in a room, and I need to, you know, ask them, why in the world are you spending money and defaulting on loans at this point in your life? I'm at a loss for words as to why people are spending money at this point. I do not understand it. They shouldn't be spending
money. So what is
there
of the idea? We've discussed this before, this very concept of doom spending. That people think that the end is nigh. Look, the world's at war, and this is terrible, and that's terrible. And, you know, look, he'll pay off, Biden will pay off student loans, so credit card debt has got to be next. I might as well have the stuff, and I'm going to go bankrupt. Who really gives a damn?
You know, that is a great theory, and I tell you why. First of all, it's not a theory that you're going to see in any textbooks. I think it's a Tony Katz 101 theory, and I like it because this president has kind of told people, look, even though the Supreme Court says, I can't write off your debt, I'm going to write off your debt. So he is kind of indicating, head faking to the world, I'm going to let you borrow money and you're not going to have to pay it back. So maybe a version of your, you know, doom spending is that, hey, the president said we're not going to have to pay it back, so let's go ahead and spend it and put it on the credit card. I mean, let me ask you a question. Does that fit with your doom spending theory?
Well, first, I must say I did not come up with doom spending. It was a piece that I read, I think it was on CNBC, and it's been months, maybe a year now, and it has stuck with me, the idea that people spend because they figure they won't have to pay it back because something government action is going to happen, or they're spending because they think everything is crazy and they need a way to calm themselves down, so they buy things. As a way of saying I'm in control, I have power, look at me, everything isn't as bad as I think it is. And don't get me wrong, psychologically, that's some really messed up stuff. But it's also possible that it's happening as a matter of just economic principle. There aren't moments where people get involved in spending because there's they see bad things on the horizon and they figure that somehow they'll get bailed out from the thing?
You know what? No, I'm going to say that you hit the nail on the head a few sentences ago when you said that's messed up stuff. Because, and I see it in this generation, I teach students, and there's some amazing students that I teach, but there are also some that they just buy things, mom and dad give them a credit card, they don't care about who's going to repay it, they're not charitable to their fellow person. There's a lot of messed up things culturally that you talk about on your show beyond economics that I think are connected to this whole concept. I think your version of doom spending is probably correct, but it's a psychological issue. There's more going on in the culture wars in this country that are causing the problem. I think that's a more important topic than any economic topic that we're talking about.
So now that you see this number, and you've seen that, talking to Dr. Matt Will, economist at the University of Indianapolis, and the Dow, I mean, for a while there was down 200 points. It's now, as we speak, down 145. The NASDAQ is down 225. Why would the market be down when spending is up?
Because the market is smart enough to know these things we've been talking about, that defaults are up, that the personal savings rate, the lowest personal savings rate, the lowest in 10 years other than last year when it was even lower. It's dipped up and then it's back down. The savings rate right now in this country is half of what it was under President Trump. People are saving half as much as they did just 5 years ago. So the market knows this. You and I are talking about it, but people on Wall Street know that defaults are up, credit card usage is up, savings is down. They know the gravy train is going to run out at some point.
Dr. Matt Will, economist at the University of Indianapolis. I appreciate you taking the time to be with us. There's more to get to. I'm Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today.
The White House press briefing is happening, and John Kirby, a spokesperson for the National Security, he's the National Security Communications Advisor, I should state. He was just wrapping up America's support for Israel. Well, what of the argument that America knew what Iran was doing and didn't say, don't do it? Didn't say, we're going to do this to you if you do it. They said, well, try and keep it small. Tony Katz today. That's what the Jerusalem Post is saying. The Turkish source, speaking on condition of anonymity, said Turkish Foreign Minister Akan Fidan had spoken to both his U.S. and Iranian counterparts in the past week to discuss the planned operation, adding Ankara, the capital of Turkey, had been made aware of possible developments. So did the U.S. know exactly what was going to happen? 350 ballistic missiles and drones and did nothing and now wants to say, look what a fine ally we are. That ain't right. That's not a fine ally at all. Let's listen to Kirby a little bit, taking questions.
About a potential response.
And just, is the president, does he have any plans to speak to Netanyahu again?
I don't have anything on the calendar to speak to, but look, I mean, they've spoken frequently over the last 6 months. They'll absolutely speak again at the appropriate time.
Thank you, Karine. John, just one day before the attack, President Biden issued a warning to Iran, don't. And now the U.S. is not taking any part in an Israeli reprisal. So does that signal to Iran that it can defy the U.S. without facing any consequences?
I don't know, man. If I'm sitting in Tehran and I'm taking a look at what just happened on Saturday night, I don't think I'd be betting that the United States is not willing to get engaged here and help defend Israel. I mean, you had American fighter pilots in the air, in combat operations, shooting down drones and missiles that were heading towards Israel, as well as U.S. Navy destroyers at sea, knocking them down from there. So the message should be very clear to anybody. When the president says we're going to take our commitments to the region seriously, when we're going to help Israel defend itself, we got skin in the game and we proved that.
I understand what you're saying about deterrence, but what about consequences?
As I just said, and Karine also led in, he had a conversation with G7 leaders. He'll be engaging with other allies and partners. We have seen swift condemnations about what Iran did from the international community, and we're going to be working with international partners to work up options to hold Iran appropriately accountable.
And then just on the logistics of this, with roughly 300 drones and missiles shot down, can you talk about how you will assess the debris fields and the shrapnel and how much that impacted people on the ground?
Well, we're not going to be doing any kind of an assessment of the impact on the ground. The Israeli Defense Forces and Israeli officials have already been out and about looking at the impact on the ground. There were very few missiles that got through, and the only damage that was done, it was very minor damage to one airbase in Israel that did not even put that airbase out of commission. The Israelis have already spoken to this. I believe they've already released imagery of some of the things they found on the ground. Sadly, a young girl, an innocent civilian, less than 10 years old, was severely wounded. That was the only casualty that we're aware of.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. I've had enough of that. The more I listen to this idea of being braggadocious about allowing an attack to occur, and look at everything we shot down. Not saying it's bad to shoot things down. I am saying that if that's the answer and you're walking away and there is no offense, it's a very strange message. Never mind, we haven't even gotten to Biden's whole don't thing and how it's not foreign policy. I'll get to that. Let's get to something that matters. A headline from the New York Post: recreational use of erectile dysfunction drugs is rising. For doctors, it's a hard no.
OMG, are you kidding me right now?
Is that right? That's how the New York Post is going to do it. The use of erectile dysfunction drugs is rising, and for doctors, it's a hard no.
I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot.
just like that headline writer. Never mind the article. Right? They're quoting Cleveland Clinic urologists and all that jazz. Recreational use of erectile dysfunction drugs is rising. I have a question about the use of the word recreational.
That is so fetch. Gretchen, stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen.
What other use is there? I'm not arguing that someone may be utilizing Cialis or Viagra to start a family. I'm saying that's a very small number. Someone may be using that to start a family. Most everybody is utilizing it recreationally. And I want to also be clear, it's not just him. It's not just him.
Yes, 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 yes.
Recreational. I'm sorry. I thought that was the weirdest headline I've ever read. See, most people are focused on the hard no pun, and that is not how I work. I am not about the puns. Everything or everyone utilizing Cialis or Viagra or any of those is utilizing it recreationally.
Yes! 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 Yes!
I mean, that's the whole point. And why would anybody be opposed to this? According to this doctor, recreational use of the drugs can carry significant risks. Yes, I want you to know that the couple in question has looked at the risks and they said, you know what? Screw the risks. We are down for this. And if you don't want us using it...
I hate old white men.
That's how they feel about you, doctor. Holy cow. By the way, if you've never tried them, they work. It's an experience. That's all I'm going to share. This is Tony Katz Today. Find everything going on at TonyKatz.com.